I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. It's podcast time, and this week got the one and only Chris Lorenzo. I've known Chris for quite a while. I kind of knew him when he was in Birmingham, and then got close to him when he moved to America, and kind of just seeing him on the road and just being about. He's obviously one of the most prolific producers in house, bass house, just everything. He's just super talented. Also one of the nicest guys in the industry. I had a great conversation with him. So without further ado, the one and only Chris Lorenzo. And we are live. Chris Lorenzo, what's cooking, man?
Not too bad, mate. You know, some days are good, some days are shit.
I feel you.
Slowly trying to navigate back from this crazy year and a half that we've all been through, you know?
Yeah, man. In other news, you know, in the UK, you don't get LaCroix.
Really?
Yeah, I've just found this. It's called Dash Water, and no word of a lie, it's better than LaCroix.
Is it really? Do you know, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not really a fan of LaCroix.
Really?
Megan loves LaCroix. Trash.
I love it.
I'm not a fan of seltzers either.
I never used to like... I've
got terrible English teeth, so as soon as I have three sips, like, my teeth are just fucking killing.
I never used to like sparkling water, and then I think I matured and grew up, and
I'm still living in Neverland, mate.
Yeah, mate. I feel it's like
sparkling water like on a hangover.
Oh, is it good or bad?
No, it's horrendous.
Is it?
It's like licking a TV. Remember the old TVs when you get the static on the screen?
Jesus Christ, that's showing our age, because we're not even that old, but...
We're not. But I'm sure we were born right in the middle of that period from where, when we were young, we would play outside and do...
Mate, can you turn your notifications off?
I can. I'm sorry, mate.
Thanks,
there,
mate.
We go.
I'm turning mine off.
Yeah, like, you know, where we come from the age gap of where we were, like, playing outside a lot when we were younger and we weren't distracted by the phones and the...
Yeah,
I think it was only when I got to 12, 13, when, like, PlayStations.
Mm, same. But, yeah, I got my first phone on my 13th birthday.
And what was your first phone?
It was like a flip. I can't even remember. It's the brand is not even around anymore. I don't even know what it was. but I never had go on.
Before my 3210.
Yeah, I never had one of those.
It was like a BT Cellnet phone, I think my first one was.
Oh, yeah. Classic. BT Cellnet.
Yeah, with the little aerial that used to stick out the top.
Yeah. I remember one of my brother's friends. I swear he was a drug dealer. And he always, like, had fancy aerials on his phone. Like, so you could like replace the aerials, so when like somebody would call you, they'd light up. I don't know why. That's why I remember.
So Chris Lake actually brought his agent, Cody Chapman, one of those old phones with the big aerials.
Really?
To make his big boy phone calls on.
That's so good. I love that. Yeah, we did grow up in a time where, because how old are you?
33.
Yeah, so you're 2 years
old. I'll say 32 because the last year didn't really count.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like a couple of years older than me, and we grew up in the era of dial-up internet.
Yes.
When you're on the internet and then your mum picks up the phone and it fucking kills the connection.
Mate, do you remember Kazaa?
No, what's Kazaa?
And Kazaa was like a Napster, like a,
okay.
a media file, like a torrent download site.
Yeah.
And then that's when my parents started learning about computer viruses. All the dark MP3s I used to download.
LimeWire. Yeah,
that's how I used to get a lot of my music, because that was when it was crossing from, obviously, like CDs into the digital world. Mm.
Can you remember AIM? AIM no. Chat. It was AOL Chat. And it was the only chat kind of forum that you would like have all your mates on. And they, if you kept your internet on, they would be able to send you music and it would just automatically download.
I never had that.
So like in the morning, like all your mates had sent you a load of music and it was there in the morning. And you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it would
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. But MSN.
There was another one as well as Kazaa. I was talking about it with AC Slater.
LimeWire was one.
LimeWire, that's the one.
Yeah, LimeWire was the big one.
Yeah, then there was MSN Messenger.
Mate, I wasted my childhood on that.
Yes.
I never understood
it. It's so good just to be able to connect with all your schoolmates.
Yeah, but we spent like 8 hours at school with them and then spent 15 hours at night talking to them.
Gossiping and chatting. Could you imagine if meme culture was alive then?
Oh, my God. We would have all committed suicide, mate. Could you imagine growing up with Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter and Facebook now? Like,
it's pretty crazy, isn't it? Yeah, because I did see there was the Facebook whistleblower that came forward, and they have in their files that it says that Instagram is bad for young girls.
Yeah. Yeah, I listened to that today.
And I completely understand it, because he was talking about like the body dysmorphia and the body shaming stuff that a lot of the kids go through now.
Do you reckon guys get that as well?
I think so.
Mm.
Clearly not me.
you just went to the gym. How was it? What did you work out?
I didn't do any in, because I had to navigate a load of routing for this weekend that I'm now pulling out on because it was too much of a shit show.
Why?
Because it was for a frat party, and it was
okay.
The show's this Saturday, what it's supposed to be, and trying to move the set times and the venues, and we just haven't been able to lock anything in. So I just said, let's just
call it a day.
But you know, when you're trying to book something the week of, the flight prices and it's so high, all the decent seats are gone on an aeroplane, and
especially at the moment,
5, so you know, me in a middle seat going to Florida from
LA,
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's not the most comfortable.
It's all right for me. It's like first class being in the cattle class for me.
Just put like a little case in front of you. You can just like lie there.
Literally, I'm all good.
Tall people problems, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the one thing I'm not. I'm glad I'm not tall. You and Chris Lakey, I'm like, and MK as well.
He's a big lad, isn't he?
He's tall as fuck.
Yeah.
And he like, I remember like when we used to tour together, and he has to kind of fly first class because he's tall.
Yeah.
And
he's rich.
Sorry?
And he's rich.
Yeah.
And being rich helps with them first class flights.
It does. It does indeed. But who do you fly with the most? American?
How do you find DJ anything like that then as well? Because so recently I now have to request on my rider that the decks are to a certain height for me, because if they're too low for me, especially when I noticed it when I was doing my open to close sets, that when I'm playing for prolonged periods of time, if the decks are too low and I'm crouching down,
yeah,
too much that like it was starting to affect my back and my neck.
Well, I'm the opposite, where I have to ask for a step.
The EZ step.
Literally, mate. Like,
yeah.
We request it for a certain height, and then you know what it's like. And this is no disrespect to promoters, but promoters don't fucking listen to it half the time or read it half the time. And then you get to the club and you're like, I can't even fucking see the decks, or they can't see me. So I'm like,
they just see like the hat.
Yeah, it's literally just bobbing around, and then my like beard like being blown in the wind or something. But it's like, I don't know.
He's just a good promoter, though. You know, when everything you've requested is
there.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not one with like a huge load of requests on my rider and stuff. You know, just little things like having the turntables to the right height.
The thing for me is like the tech, which amazes me how often people don't get that right.
Yeah.
And they say they just okay it, that they've got it all, and then you turn up and you're like, guys, you're paying me pretty decent money to be in this club, and you're not giving me the tools that we've asked for, which makes no sense.
Yes, I know.
But
you know how easy it happens more often than not.
It happens at festivals.
My biggest pet peeve at festivals is when there's the delay between the monitor and what's in your headphones.
Oh yeah, that's terrible.
Have you ever matched something up in your headphones and you bring it in?
And
then it's like the Grand National and you have to like correct real quick. Or maybe I've just got worse at mixing.
Maybe you just can't mix like shit, mate.
Just coming in like
how did you find
sometimes you'll send it the wrong way and then it's just like whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah. I think
it shows the human, I guess.
Yeah, I listened to a set of mine the other day. Someone recorded it, and I don't think I can DJ anymore, mate. It was literally bad. I'm like, did I really play like this? And you don't realize when it's live, you don't really hear it. But when somebody records a set and then there's no crowd and there's no atmosphere, you're like, oh my god.
So it was just kind of recorded off the CDJ.
Yeah, it was recorded straight out of the mixer.
Yeah, because you've got crowd ambience and like, you know, natural reverbs that can hide that normally, you know. And also, like, I think we're just very critique of ourselves.
Maybe.
You got to think how intoxicated a lot of people are that we're playing to.
Yeah, they don't care, do they?
Some of those little mistakes, you know, can just get like...
Until you put it on SoundCloud and then the internet just rips your asshole out.
Oh, man. Yeah, but you know, that's not real life, is it? The comments.
This is true. To be fair though, I'm pretty sure you don't, but I may get one bad comment per 100 posts. I don't know about you.
There's always going to be a troll. There's not one person who I've ever seen who has said that I'd never get.
Yeah.
You know, negative comments.
It's very rare for me.
You could be the ripest peach on the tree, but not everybody's going to like peaches.
Mate, turn those notifications off.
I did. I don't know what happened. Sorry, mate. Notifications.
I remember having like one dude that was always trolling me. Always. Like once a week, he'd like comment something on my photos, and it wasn't even like funny. It was like, dude, you're just trying to be nasty. And I DM'd him and was like, mate, what's your issue?
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm sorry, man, I'm just trying to be funny. And I'm like, dude, you're not being funny, and I'm cool with it. Like, I can take what you're saying, but if you do that to somebody else, the consequences might be a little different. Like, be careful with what you're actually, or how you're actually talking to people.
And I found some of the messages since the pandemic have started getting slightly heavier as well. I've been speaking about it with a few of my other DJ friends and they're all saying the same. I had a message last week and it was saying something along the lines of, I'm going to get it. You know, you tell me what you would think when you first read this message. I had to let you know you're so rude. I don't know who you think you are, but there is way better DJs than you that have never been rude like you. You should really think about how you treat people. With a personality like yours, you can get out of California. I'm born and raised in San Diego, and people don't act like you here. We don't want you, and I'll be sure to pass on the word of how you are not cool. How would that make you feel reading that?
Yeah, it makes you feel shit, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I messaged the person back and I was not sure what you're referring to here. Can you give me some backstory? And
yeah.
They read it, didn't reply. And he was like, look, sorry to be pushy. You're telling me to get out of California. Like, I'd like to know what it is that I've done. They replied and said, you should have took that quick picture instead of taking that shot with your entourage. I never got that vibe from Charmy.
Jesus.
And he's like, really? Really? You know?
This mad man.
You know me as well. I'm like a very like happy, friendly person when I'm out, and I always give people the time of the day.
But I also think it's like we give a lot. Like, I'm not all DJs give a lot, but I know you give a lot back to your fans and things like that, and I know I do. And you can't. I guess that's the thing, is because of social media. Maybe this might be the issue, but because of social media, we're so accessible. People can tell us everything. People can contact us, which may mean that some people, and I think this is the very small, like 2%, may think that we owe them something by them coming to a show. And it's like, well, no, this is equal parts. We're all here to make the show amazing, and you're here to have an amazing time. It's not all us having to give. It's a little bit of both.
And I think, you know, the privacy should be respected as well. And I think that level of privacy that we might have had, say, 10 years ago has gone now.
I think there's pros and cons to it, right? Like,
I'm quite a private person.
Yeah.
By nature, usually. So like, when I'm out and about and I'll give it my all. I'll speak to everyone.
Yeah.
And having a good time. I want to make sure everyone feels good about themselves and they're having a good time. But then once I'm, say, off the road, I want to relax, recharge, I want to be in peace, you know.
How do you do that? Because I really struggle with that, with, like, after touring, like, actually going and relaxing and, like, switching off, because I fucking struggle with it.
You see, it might be different for you because, like, you've been sober for a long time now.
Yeah.
And for me, because I'm, you know, by nature just being a party person,
yeah.
By the time I come off tour, it's quite easy for me to relax and recharge because I have no choice.
Yeah.
I'm big, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, like I can, so I found that having things outside of music is what really helped to like channel that for me. So I play a lot of football.
Mm.
And I was worried when I moved here like 3 years ago that I wouldn't be able to play football, but I play more now here than I do, than I did back in England.
Yeah.
And it's nice for me to be able to come back and have something to look forward to where I can just go and disconnect and disengage.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
For me, that's what I find is the one thing that completely takes me out of that headspace of thinking about music and sets and, you know, and all business. The other things that go on with it.
Yeah.
And all the business part. You know, it's just you need something that completely isolates you from
everything.
Yeah, from whatever it is you were doing.
Do you, like, take full-on days off music where you don't look at emails, you don't look at anything, you don't look at social media, you just literally just, like, fuck it?
Yeah, I'm pretty, like, good at doing that.
Whether
it's sitting there and playing Call of Duty all day with the lads, or, you know, going out hiking somewhere with Megan.
Yeah.
Going on a little road trip.
Yeah, I'm shit at that.
It's especially like road trips, because you have to drive on a road trip, so, you know, you are, there's no way you can look at anything, you know.
Did that happen for you, or did it take time, or was it always something you were good at?
It's not something I've consciously noticed before. I think it was coming up before the pandemic. It was then I was realizing in my head, it's like I need some kind of break and rest.
Yeah,
because I could feel the candle was burning.
Mm. Yeah,
and it's like, you know, when something's a little thing and it's not a big thing, but then it.
Yeah, it gets bigger and bigger.
So it starts becoming bigger and bigger. Like, so for me, being on the road and then trying to navigate being in the studio was starting to grind my gears a bit. And I was becoming less of a producer, more of a beat maker.
Mm.
I was trying to make
quick records.
Yeah, quick records that would work on the dance floor, you know.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know about you, but for lockdown, that completely changed it for me. Like, actually having the time to just, like, write records again.
Yeah.
And right.
So, so for me, I actually switched off for like the first 7 or 8 months. And like, it felt nice knowing that I didn't have to like, you know, try and draw something up for the weekend or the weekend after or whatever.
Yeah.
Because everything was literally on hold. It was like such a nice bit of breathing space for me.
Just yeah, for the start of lockdown, I went completely the opposite and was like, I'm writing just loads.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think I'd just done like 3.5 months open to close tour, and I'd written music.
Those tours will take it out of you, mate.
Yeah, they do. I love it though. I absolutely love it.
It's and so good. It's the best way to DJ.
It is. It really is, and I think it's the best way for fans to kind of understand DJing. Sets, especially in America, because in the UK, I don't know, but like playing in the UK, we play for longer here in UK and Europe. You get longer sets generally. But in America,
when you've got that like power hour festival set, or even 45 minutes sometimes, it's like
playing after you is the worst as well.
It's not that bad,
it's fucking awful, mate.
It's not that bad,
it's terrible.
It could be worse, though.
I don't know who else would be worse to play after.
A dubstep act.
Yeah, you're pretty close to that, though, right?
Yeah, and no. Like, sometimes it depends.
I'm already giving you shit.
Like, because, like, talking on that subject, like, you know, I'm quite known for a few different sounds, where it's like heavier kind of night bass stuff, and then more organ house.
Yeah.
Costumes. And I've always tried to find like the middle ground in between different genres.
Yeah,
you know, because like let's take England for example. If you've got like a house night, it's strictly like tech house only. Yeah. If you've got a bass night, it's strictly bass only. And you know, for me, that can become quite tedious after a while.
This is why I like America. Because
you have more freedom to
there's
different sounds.
It's not,
and then they're a bit more receptive.
Exactly. I feel it sounds really weird to say, but Americans, I think, because house music, electronic music kind of left America for a long time. And then the EDM kind of scene brought it back, like to the commercial kind of commercially. I think it's just opened people's minds to a lot more music, a lot more different, and like a lot more music. Whereas in you know what it's like growing up in Birmingham, like bass house or nothing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, bass house, drum and bass.
Exactly.
Don't get me wrong, there were some great house nights.
Yeah.
In Birmingham.
Same
as well.
In Bristol.
Like, Birmingham's been like a real good melting pot and like at the forefront of bringing like music and talent through.
But it's a night for one genre, and
yes,
it's the same everywhere.
Unless it's just, you know, like a festival thing where it's different stage, but you know, still same same kind of complex. So I did an event before in Birmingham, and I tried to like mix the lineups up a little bit, and it didn't work.
No, doesn't work too at all.
Crafty, where over here you can do that.
Yeah, and you can get away with it.
Going into dubstep, back into house, into drum and bass. And
yeah.
The energy's still there. I was playing with Wax Motif in Arizona the other day, and we had to come on after Craig, who was shelling it down with dubstep. But we went on, and the place just lit up straight away. And it's like, whoa.
Well, look what Carnage is doing at the moment.
What is he doing? I don't know too much.
He's doing this Gordo stuff, where he's just kind of doing the tech house thing, but he still plays like everything, like tech house, dubstep, techno, like everything in one set. And it's almost like open format, really. Yeah. It's
I've always been a fan of open format.
Mm.
If it's good, I'll fucking play it.
Yeah.
You know, man. And like, I think it's good to take risks sometimes because, you know, to be brave and try something that might not work.
What's the worst that's going
to
happen?
You know, a bit more instead of just kind of sticking to the plan, you know.
What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to, 5 minutes later, you're going to change the record.
Yeah, just switching back into something else.
Yeah, you know? It's just It's not fucking brain surgery, is it? Is it? We're not going to kill anyone.
But I get bored easy when I DJ as well. Yeah. I really do.
I like long mixes and long mixes for me. I really like, and just like kind of slowly. What, like when you did your open to closes, like what did you like kind of start it slow and kind of get faster?
I start slow. So I'll coordinate with the lighting engineer and everything before we start. But it's like, look, when I start, I'm going to start off like 120 to 122. Yeah. You know, just like, you know, those groovers that you just pop that you never really get a chance to play that you're into. And I'll just kind of open up with that. And I'll have it at like 3/4 volume. And I'll be like, look, have all the lights on.
Yeah.
You know, because when people are like flooding in and stuff, I just want it to feel quite bright and open. Instead of dark instantly. And I'll say, look, as it gets busier, just make the lights slowly darken off and stuff. And until we get to the point where we're pretty much at no lights in the venue. Mm. You know, and then as soon as that point comes, that's when I start ramping it up.
Yeah.
And I'll bring the BPM up and start bringing out a few of the more heavy hitters.
The bangers. Where did it start? Where did it start for you? Because I've known you for years.
You mean with open to close or just
no? Just generally, because I've known you for years, but I knew you when you were in Birmingham, but we didn't really talk. Like we said hi.
If we are going back to the Stone Age and Neanderthal times. I used to play guitar from when I was 7 years old up until I was 15, and I was really good. And for some reason, I just ended up not playing anymore because my school, it turned into a technology school.
Yeah.
So they're putting like a music studio with a load of computers in with Fruity Loops and Logic and all that stuff. And I went into the studio once and I was like, well, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I would wag my lessons to go into this music production suite because no one was utilizing it that much. And I'd just be in there messing around on Fruity Loops and I think it was Reason 2.5 at the time or something. Logic 5.5 and
Cubase.
Yeah, we didn't have Cubase. That's one software I never really messed with too much.
That's why I started on Cubase. Well, I started on Reason.
I know a few people that started on it and still use it. It's Cubases.
I don't know. Yeah, like I know
it's good.
Breach used it. Ben Westbeach. I know he uses it. But I don't know many other people, but
is that what he made Jack with?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Cubase is really good with audio. Really good. And you can do a lot of cool shit with it. A lot easier, but the interface is like Pro Tools, kind of.
Yes.
It's a bit weird.
It had a really good sound engine.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, because my main starting software then was Reason, and I used Reason 3 for the longest time.
Yeah.
Reason. And so I ended up leaving school, and I went to a music production college in Lascelles in Birmingham, and I did about a year there. And we weren't really taking it too seriously. We were just like going there to smoke weed and record vocals and make tunes and stuff, and we did the bare minimum. The criteria that was supposed to be met. So I ended up flunking out of that after a year. And I was making like baseline house style music.
Yeah.
And I can't remember how I come across David Boy at Echo Records now. So I do remember. So my friend Mickey T and David Clift used to DJ on an internet radio station called Baseline Beats.
Okay.
And I would go around to his house and I would just like mess around on his decks with him and stuff. And I was like, this is kind of cool. And I remember a few weeks around that point, I went to an event in Birmingham called the Moon Lounge. It was a famous like speed garage and bassline house night. Mm. And we ended up going back to one of my friend's houses who had the decks set up. And I started mixing on the decks and I was obsessed. I was like, this is fucking sick.
Yeah.
It would just be me just playing the same like 10 records or however many was there weren't too many just doing that. I started doing the internet radio thing with my friend more, and then I did a song in Reason with Mickey T. We called it A Soul Thing. It was my very, very first release ever. they got pressed to vinyl, and he's fucking pony. It's so bad.
Do you still have it?
I do, yeah. It's I've got the record amongst my records in there. You can find it on
what's it called?
A Soul Thing. Mickey T and Motions, A Soul Thing.
So your first DJ name was, or artist name was, Emotions?
No, just Motions.
Motions.
Yes.
Nice.
Was it Motions or Chris Lawrence? I can't remember. I've had a load of wanky fucking aliases over the years and stuff.
But I've only had my name. I've never changed my name. I've written some shit and released some shit, but it's always been Will Clark.
Haven't we all, man?
Oh, man. It's dangerous. But,
you know, that's all about the journey and the...
When was it that you were like, okay, I can write good music now?
I'm still yet to get to
Because mine was like last week.
You know what I mean, yeah? Honestly, like, I don't know my keys.
Yeah.
I don't know chord structures or anything. I just have an ear that tells me, I think that sounds right.
Yeah, but I don't think you necessarily need to be like
classically. This leads to battles when I'm working with Chris Lake quite a lot.
Why?
Because I'll do something and he'll be like, it's not in key. And I'll be like, but it sounds good.
Yeah.
And he's like, but it's not in key. I'm like, but it sounds good, doesn't it? And for years, we've had these back and forth battles of him re-jigging keys or pitches on vocals and stuff. And, you know, look, granted, a lot of the times he's right. Sometimes he isn't. And so sometimes, look, I'm trying to think about, like,
I'm on you with this one.
An iconic kind of old record that's like really out of key but works.
I'm with you on this one. Do you mix in key?
No.
No, me neither.
I've just never used it. I've never felt the need to do it.
It's just got to sound good.
Because of the background I come from, it was a lot of the records were like sampled and stuff. Mm. And sometimes you're just sampling things out of key, and like, you know, the key could be one key on the breakdown and it will just drop into something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wrote a record.
The contrast is like,
I wrote a record for someone recently and they had to get the sample resung, and they wanted like the original artist, and they went and resung the original artist. I'm like, no, you've got to resing the sample, because the resample is coming off like a vinyl that's probably pitched down to like this. Like, just fucking resing the sample. Don't try and go and find
sample
it.
Sample replays, do this, boom.
Yeah.
To any producers watching this who do want samples redone, like Sample Replays are a company in London, and they do a fantastic job. And the purpose of having samples replayed is because to clear the original sample sometimes can be an absolute nightmare. Mm-hmm. Where if you recreate it, you can now sell it, but then you just have to give up the publishing to the people who made the song originally. So if you've ever heard like a dodgy cover of a song where you're like, it sounds
similar,
but not the same, it's because the sample's been redone.
How
sometimes you walk into a Burger King or like a restaurant and you'll hear like a dodgy version of a song, and that's because they don't have the rights to play the original music.
Yeah. How annoying is it though when you've got a bad sample replay and you hear it on a record? Because I can't put a bad replay out on a record personally, but there's been a lot.
You're a better man than me, bro.
I'm just
so when me and Hannah did the Rhymes recorder, we had to put out a dodgy replay version.
It didn't sound bad though.
It didn't sound as good as what we originally had though as well.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's like you get so used.
I think that's maybe because it's in my head.
Yep, 100%. You're so used to it.
Way, and now I'm hearing it another way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, no one else noticed that. How did that whole Rhymes thing come across? I've never spoke to you about that.
It got picked up by Annie in the early stages. So it went out to Justin Martin and Annie Mac, I think. And Annie just got behind it so much at Radio 1.
Yeah.
And she just pushed and pushed and pushed it. And then Virgin came in and they signed it. And then it started going into a playlisting on radio.
Yeah.
And then eventually, after a few months, I think it peaked at number 6.
It's a good number.
In the UK chart, I was like, wow.
dance record. That's what I love about the UK.
For something that, like, you see that base station there?
Yeah.
That's what we use for it.
Really?
All of the noises, yeah. I still have all of the presets in there.
That's so good.
Which is pretty crazy. And they're like, he was round about the time when I'd just got that base station as well.
Mm.
So they're some of the first presets that I've ever had saved in there, and they're still in there.
They were nice little synths as well, actually. I like those base stations.
Yeah, they're so good still. Because even now, I use the arpeggiator from that to power
everything else.
Yeah, this orange thing. Yeah, there's a company in Birmingham. It's a company called Analog Solutions, and it's called a fuse box. So it's a semi-modular.
Do you have to build it yourself?
No. It's all built for you. But when I say semi-modular, it's like, you know, you can still use it like a normal synth, but then, you know, you can see obviously things and patch things, and you can patch it to other synths. And
yeah. If anybody's listening and not watching, go watch it on YouTube, because then you'll understand a little bit more what Chris is talking about.
I still don't understand it properly. I just start plugging things into other things. As soon as it sounds good, because I've never really wanted to dive down that full modular route.
I just think everybody that does it just doesn't make any music.
No, exactly. So even when we're using the synths and stuff here, like, we will just record like hour-long clips, sometimes 2-hour-long clips of just jamming. Mm. Like, you know, have a drum beat in the back and then just make loads of weird noises. Yeah. And then off the back of that, you know, audio you've got from the recording, then we will just sample that.
Which is a
much quicker way of, you know, producing them. Because if you've got, like, if you're going out to make a song and you've got the samples and noises already, it makes building a track so much easier.
Yeah, see, I've got this thing where, like, I've got a load of hardware stuff and I use it, but I'm like, I go to it to, like, go, I need to make this sound because this is what the sound I want in this record, rather than do that. But I've done it with other people where they just record a bunch, and it is a fun creative process. It's almost like a jamming session, right? It's just like,
well, me and friend within have done about 5 sessions together where we're like, we're gonna make a song, and all we've done is just jam.
We did the same. I did the same with him,
all different noises, and we've not put out one record. But I love it. I just love that way of working, because you know, especially in this day and age, some people are under the impression that if you're going to get into a session with someone, you have to get the song out and get it done. But sometimes it's nice just to be able to, like, link up with someone and just have a jam out and just vibe. You know, not everything needs to be created for release.
No, it's just have fun, isn't it? I think that's what a lot of it can be lost. I can lose that myself. Is that, like,
and as soon as you take that out as well, you eliminate the pressure of having to get a song done. And sometimes having, like, pressures or deadlines on things can really shit on your creativity.
Massively. I've literally...
I hate deadlines. I hate them.
I plan so far ahead that there's no... Like, I have all my music pretty much signed until the end of summer next year, because I'm just like...
Nice.
Then I don't have to worry about it. And I can change something if I'm like, actually, I don't like that anymore. It gives me so much time to just, like, breathe, and then no pressure in the studio.
It's
depressing, pressure in the studio, because it's like we want to be creative, but you can't be creative when there's pressure.
No.
Remixes do my head in when they're like, oh yeah, we need it next week.
I'm quite the opposite with remixes.
Really?
There's no pressure.
I never
felt pressure on a remix. I'll just smash it out.
I don't think it's pressure for me, but it's like, I want to, I don't know about you, but, like, when I write a record, I want to be able to, like, play it and listen to it and see, and then go back to the studio once I've done it and be like, okay, I want to change this, or I want to change that.
In that aspect, absolutely, I agree.
Or then A&Rs try and get involved.
There's a few remixes I've done before where the A&Rs have said, can you change this or make it more like this record that you did before, or make it more clubby? And I'm like,
fuck off.
Especially through the pandemic, there was a few remixes I did then. And I don't know about you, but I wasn't in, like, making club music.
Money remixes.
Yeah.
I did a couple of those in pandemic and wish I didn't.
Yeah.
now?
Oh, man, I did a live stream for a nicotine company.
Did you?
Yeah.
Hope they paid you.
It was back at the early part of the pandemic, and like, they paid me a decent bit of money for it, but I think we were supposed to stream for an hour, and on the time we were supposed to stream, when they announced, for whatever reason, it didn't work. And after that, I was like, I'm not doing any more live streams.
No.
I know that, you know, live streams was the thing that everyone was doing at the time. And
I refused. I didn't do a single one the whole of lockdown.
Yeah. I did one, actually. I think I played for like 5 hours and I drank a box and a half of wine.
I think I heard about that.
Yeah, it was pretty messy.
Yeah, I think I heard about that one. I think Chris told me about that one.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun, man. As long as you're having fun, that's all that matters.
I was at the time.
That's great. That's great.
I am now. I have to be sober now, by the way.
What, to drink? To drink? To play?
Yeah, so I could be no more drinking.
Really?
Yes.
I feel like your face is saying, I don't know if I believe this.
Yeah, it's a reluctant one. But like, so I am now on the path of sobriety.
Please tell me why. What happened?
My liver is not too healthy right now.
Okay.
So I've been feeling super tired recently. Mm. And I was getting like weird, like I've been punched in my face, yellow bags under my eyes and stuff. And I initially had this like shaky finger and thumb for a while. So I was like, let's have some blood tests to see what it is.
Yeah.
Turns out that's nothing. And what was highlighted on the test is that I have enzymes that are leaking out of my liver into my bloodstream.
Fuck, man.
Which is a sign that there's something up with my liver.
Yeah.
Which shows the years of drinking.
and you drink.
Taking its toll now.
You party, mate. You party hard.
Yes. I don't know where the off switch is. That was my problem a lot.
Yeah. So, fully sober?
I have to be, yeah. Fully sober.
Sick, man. Congrats.
I did my first sober show in a few years.
How you find it?
I enjoyed it. It was nice.
You remember it?
It's good to have composure, yeah. And I did. I remembered every moment. And also, it's good to watch the journey of people who are sober.
Oh, my God. It's the best.
And I'm like, is that? Am I like this?
No, you're worse.
And I was just like, wow.
Yeah. It's
quite interesting. I am definitely going to be on like a new path and journey now with changing my rider. And
congrats, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think
the only sober DJs I know are you and Chris.
And Justin.
Justin now as well, yeah.
Yeah. I think Claude's sober as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people are going there. Yeah, Claude's been sober since...
You wouldn't think so with his Instagram videos, would you?
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Just got a screw loose, hasn't he? I think more and more people are slowly going there.
Yeah.
Well, we're all just getting older, mate. And everyone's bodies are just, like, taking the toll. I think.
And especially with like, the way we travel and talk. Mm. A lot as well.
Yeah, because I don't think it was ever...
I know it's a given thing, you know, like a lot of people are like, you know, you're DJs and stuff, you earn good money, you know, you should be happy, you shouldn't have anything to moan about. Like, it's not true, we have a fucking lot to moan about.
And we don't earn that much money. It's only certain people that earn all the money.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, we earn good money. Like, some of us, we're lucky enough that we earn good money. And I can pretty much put you in that category as well, but
yeah,
people don't really.
If I can afford to live in Los Angeles, you know, like
exactly, you're doing well.
I'm not saying I don't, so I'm very happy with you know what I've accomplished and what I'm looking forward to.
Totally, but it's also people don't realize the amount of money we put back into it, and the cost of touring, the cost of everything else.
The cost of touring on your mental and physical health,
is
quite draining. I was watching you know, the footballer Wan Mata for Man United.
Yeah, I'm not a big football fan, but I've heard of his name.
Yes, I watched a TV interview he did before, and he was just explaining the psychological effects of being in front of 90,000 people, either screaming and cheering for you, or screaming abuse. And then an hour later, you're at a hotel, yeah. you're in a hotel room on your own, completely isolated. Mm. And, you know, having such a high to such a low.
Yeah.
Can be quite jarring.
Yeah. For me, going back to touring after COVID, I was like, that was the biggest thing for me where I was like, shit, like we destroy our bodies. Like yeah. no sleep. I think the last 3 weeks I did one night of 8 hours sleep and all the others were like no hours, 2 hours, 3 hours. And that's even on down days because my brain just doesn't switch off in touring. So like yeah. 3 hours sleep, 2 hours sleep is just kind of normal. And then
I fall asleep with like a TV on.
Yeah.
Do you suffer from tinnitus?
Touch wood. Not yet. Do you?
So look, for me, I noticed like it's calmed down a lot now, but I don't know whether it's because we've started doing shows again, but through the pandemic when I was at home a lot in silence, and because don't forget there was no traffic or anything, there was just no noise anywhere, and I was noticing my ears ringing so fucking much.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it's...
Do you wear earplugs?
Yeah, always. I've worn earplugs since I was like 12 years old.
Fair play. Yeah, like, I didn't start wearing them until I was like 28, 29.
Yeah,
So I think the damage was done.
Yeah, I got earplugs right when I first started DJing. And I was just like, I have to. But like, could you imagine like being Carl Cox? And like what, all the old school dudes.
He had to be doing something right because, you know, imagine at his age now and he's still at the top of his game. What a fucking achievement.
I know. How?
It's insane.
Danny Tenaglia.
Get him on and find out.
I know. Jesus, I'd love to get him on. It'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But like,
brilliant. I bet he's got some amazing things to...
The thing is it's very strange in every... In every industry, there's one person that's like at the top of everything, right? And I would say he's at the top of our industry. Like footballers, there's like a top of the best footballers. There's like two or three best footballers in the world.
Yeah.
Like, but to get to the top of your game and stay there, like footballers don't stay there. Formula One drivers don't stay there for that long. Like athletes.
This is what I've said to a lot of up and coming producers as well. It's like, you know, getting yourself there and getting on the map. Like might seem like the hard part, but that's the easy part.
The easy bit.
It's then maintaining a consistent level of relevance and good music and keeping people interested in what you are doing. That's
how many times in your career you were like, have you been like, I need to change things up because I'm plateauing?
Only one time, and that was like many, many, many years ago.
Yeah.
But then off the back of that, I always said to myself, going back to what I was talking about with the middle ground earlier, it's like if I always try and find a middle ground between what's going on, it will always just keep me in a nice pocket where I'm not sounding like anyone else.
Yeah, for me, it was...
It's also important as well because a lot, you know, like don't get me wrong, when I was first getting into producing and stuff, like you all always look towards your peers and stuff on what they're doing and kind of use that as a benchmark to what you want to get to. So, you know, because there are times where I'll hear like carbon copies of songs that, you know, I've done over the years. And, you know, sometimes it can be frustrating, but then you have to think back to what you were like when you were kind of coming up and stuff as well.
I think it's frustrating when somebody...
It's easier to look at something and copy it than to invent that yourself.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I think... I don't know. There's pros and cons, right? Like, it's when somebody copies what you're doing it's the best form of flattery, right? I don't know can't remember what the saying is, but it is like the best form of flattery. But then also when somebody that's extremely successful copies what you're doing and then tries to make it their thing is very fucking frustrating. I'm sure you've had that as well.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Not as much as a lot of my other friends have.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean, though.
Yeah.
It's, because, you know, I think there are certain ways that when you are at a good level of staying there.
Yeah.
And, you know, so some people will look to what the kids are doing and then evolve that way, which is exactly what you're talking about there.
Pretty much. Pretty
happens
much.
Happens a lot. It always will happen. You know, it's the music industry.
It's fashion. It's fashion. And I always say this, music is fashion. It's the same as the fashion industry. Like, soon everyone's going to...
And now it's fast fashion as well. It's not like 10, 15 years ago where... there weren't that many people producing, like being a music producer now is so accessible for everybody.
Well, how many people like on a weekly basis hit you up and be like, I want to write music. I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm like, cool, do it.
Quite a few, yeah. But I'm very selective with like who I work with and stuff. Like, all I just want to do cool shit with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not really interested in doing like a high level collabs. It's like, you know, look at us, we're making moves kind of thing. I couldn't give a flying fuck about that. I just want to do cool shit with my friends. That's it.
I know, I mean just general like new kids that just like are hitting you up like on like, how do you do this, how do you do that? Like, for me, I get it so much, and then
I also over Insta and stuff,
you know? I also get a lot of people saying like wanting it now. It's like they decided they're a producer now and that they want to be writing hits tomorrow, and it's like
it's not gonna happen
mate. Like,
I mean, like, you could be an anomaly, don't get me wrong, you know, but for the most part it takes years and years and years and years. It's what Carl Cox will probably tell you. You know what I mean? Just years and years. You can you will never know everything.
No.
Especially with how fast everything's evolving, with all the new technology that's coming in and stuff. It's just...
it's mad. It's amazing. I love
it. More so now than ever. Like, there is just so many different things and different options and different ways of putting things together.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Producing and...
How much luck do you think there is in this industry? Or in life?
I think in the dance music industry, more so than it is in other industries.
Yeah. Why do you think that?
There was always that saying that, you know, you have your one kind of shot, and once you have that, that's it kind of thing. You know, X Factor vibes and stuff. But in dance music, it's completely different because of how fast everything is and because of how quick and easily you can reinvent your sound.
Yeah.
Or try and change it into something. Look, as long as it's good and people like it and it hits...
yeah, I guess you're right.
You've always got to have a successful career.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is an element of luck in a lot of things as well. Like, you know, because you could release a song in 1 month where there's not much going on around it and it could pop, but then if you release it and there's a load of other things going on at the same time, you know, you're not going to get that same heat. So timing is always good as well. And even with records as well, there's records that I'll be releasing over the next like 6 months that I wrote 3-4 years ago. So I've had sitting there, because sometimes you can write a record and it's like something's not right about it.
Yeah.
And then as times change, it's like actually that record,
it's perfect feels now.
And I've always said that as music producers, we are always going to be like ahead of the curve in that aspect. And as someone who wants to try and make original music, and if you've made something that's quite different to what's out there at the minute, like 9 times out of 10, it's not going to hit. And, you know, and the thing about some of the pioneers that we've had over the years, they'll be putting out this forward-thinking stuff. And then when it becomes fashionable, it's the other people around it who latch onto it, who end up getting the success off the back of it.
But I think the pioneers eventually come through. And this is the thing for me, is like, it's about putting the foundations into your career rather than looking for the success straight away. Because if
absolutely, yeah. If you've got no foundation, then it's, I think of it like an audio wave, you know, it's like a bass wave. If you have that slow and steady build, you're going to stay there for longer. But, you know, if you have the quick hit and it just puts you up there, you're more inclined just to go.
Yeah. And the pressure at the top there, like,
there's a lot. Think how many people have had like big like chart topping records that have come off the back of the dance scene.
Yeah.
And if they wanted, they could have maintained that same thing. But a lot of people kind of retreat and then go back down into this like, I want to be an underground DJ producer kind of like state of mind, you know what I mean?
Always amazes me that to a certain extent sometimes, because their commercial stuff was so much better than their underground stuff.
Yes.
So it's like, just stick with it sometimes. But then, like, let's say, for instance, like Camel Fat, right? Like, those boys obviously had the, like, Cola crazy hit that they weren't expecting. And they were out of that, they were allowed to carve, like, a pretty underground commercial successful career out of that.
Yeah.
There's not many people that have been able to do that.
Oh, yeah, it's... And that was like, look how simple it was for them as well.
Yeah. But again, it's like, how long were they doing it? They were like five years as Camel Fat, doing Camel Fat beforehand, and then their careers beforehand.
Oh, mate, their careers beforehand, they were prolific.
Exactly. Pretty Green Eyes.
Prolific, mate.
Mate, how many times have you been at a school disco listening to that, trying to pull a girl?
Yeah. On the under-18s nights. Did you ever used to have under-18s nights in your area?
I used to DJ
them. Like one of Roses and stuff. Oh, mate, so good.
Yeah, I used to DJ them. And then everything...
You've been DJing for a while then.
Yeah, 13 years. I was 13 when I... Well, I was actually playing when I was younger, but I was playing in clubs when I was 13.
Cool.
Yeah, so we used to do all the under-18s. And then the minute we'd play hip-hop, there'd always be, like, massive fights on the dance floor. Every time. and then you'd have to play house again. Or it wasn't even house then. It was, like, trance.
That's what it would have been, wouldn't it? Yeah, and like, because when was that kind of...
2003.
My MySpace electro era. You know, like the old A-track.
Yeah, that was like 2005, like, Blockhouse.
That's what I was thinking of. Because I know Mickey Slim was like...
Mickey Slim.
Shout out Mickey Slim, yes.
Mickey Slim.
Mickey Slim and Funk Agenda back in the day.
Funk Agenda. I forgot he's a Brummy boy.
He is, isn't he?
I've
never met him.
He's wicked. I spent quite a bit of time with him in Ibiza when I used to live out there.
What I'd do just to be young living back in Ibiza again.
Did you live there?
Yeah, I did a few seasons there.
What years?
I would live in Calavadea. What year? So I was 20 and 21. So when would that have been? I'm 33 now.
Because I was there 2006.
I left school in 2005.
Yeah, we missed each other.
Oh, yeah, it would have been like 2010, 2010, 2011, 2012.
We were out there at the same time.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I was a resident at Orange Corner.
You didn't have the beard then, though, did you?
No, I didn't. I looked like a gay porn star.
Yes.
An underage one as well.
Where did I used to DJ? So me and my friend, Ian, we were the first DJs to play at Jet Apartments next to Bora Bora.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, you know, it was always Bora Bora for the longest time. And
yeah,
I think there was a bit of beef between Bora Bora and Jet Apartments and all about timing again.
Yeah.
So I was doing these catamaran parties.
Okay.
Italian and Spanish company.
Yeah.
Where we'd like, because, you know, most of the boat parties in Ibiza, you can't jump off but these catamarans you could, so we could pull up and like jump off in different areas and stuff. So we were doing those four times a week. And then whoever was running them knew someone at Jet Apartments. So me and my friend started DJing at Jet Apartments at the same time that Bora Bora was going on.
Yeah.
And like, we were getting good numbers compared to Bora Bora at the time.
That's amazing. Some of the stuff
I was playing was so bad. So bad.
Funk Agenda was massive then as well.
Yeah.
Man with the Red Face.
He's Man with the Red Face remix, yeah.
He's in LA now, isn't he?
Because he did I Wanna Rock Right Now.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
I Wanna Rock Right Now.
Doesn't he live in LA?
I'm not sure.
Or did he go back to Birmingham? I know he moved to America.
Yeah, I hope not. Can you imagine having to move back to Birmingham after living in Los Angeles for so long?
To be fair, I'm not a fan of Los Angeles. I don't think I could live there again.
Do you know what? There's ups and downs.
Yeah.
There really is. Yeah.
I'm trying to...
I don't live in the thick of Los Angeles anymore. I moved north to like Studio City.
Oh, okay. Is that the valleys?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
But it's as close to like Los Angeles as you'll get in the valleys and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, when I first moved here, I love the energy and I love the... Yeah, everyone's like a go-getter. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
And it was inspiring to be around at the time. But then, you know, I think when you move here, you start seeing the darker side of...
Yeah, especially during COVID, it's got dark. LA's got very dark.
Yeah.
Sadly.
And a lot of LA, it's quite like, almost like a social construct, you know? Like,
would you leave?
The first question I'm going to get asked is, what do you do?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Well, I am not that type of person. I'm just sparking up a conversation.
But I think that's America generally.
Anything but industry, do you know what I mean?
I think that's America generally.
Yeah.
Because,
maybe.
I don't find it so much. I don't find it at all like that in the UK.
Never has been, unless you go Soho House.
Yeah, but...
The breeding ground of A&Rs.
You're a fucking bellend if you go to Soho House.
About to get cancelled by every A&R in England.
I don't care. They have shit choice anyway. Have you been to the Soho House in LA yet?
No.
No, me neither. I bet the Berlin one is nice, though, I must say.
Never been to Berlin.
Oh, mate.
Do you know what? I've never been a fan of Berlin, because I'm all about inclusivity and everyone should get a chance. And all I hear about that fucking shit-ass club where people queue up for hours, and if you're not dressed right, they tell you to fuck off.
Burgein. But I honestly think Berlin's the most inclusive place in the world. Because,
apart from that club.
Yeah, but I think, like, I've not been to that club, but yeah, that side of it. But, like...
You're going to let me in if I roll up in my fucking Stone Island jacket.
You are not getting in, mate. You got to be wearing some, like...
tattoos on his face. It looks like he's about to rip your heart out. He's like, no, you can't come in because you look a bit too rude.
He's about to bend you over and fist you, mate. That's all he wants to do.
You know what I mean? With them tats on his face, fuck. So, yeah, I've just never seen the appeal with Berlin.
I love it. It's a cool city. I think you'd really enjoy it because it is very inclusive. Like, there's clubs where you, like, aren't allowed in with clothes on. Like...
Wow.
Yeah, it's like... serious, like you can be whoever you want, and there's no rules or laws about it. Like, you can go to a club and literally like fist someone in the club and it's normal.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's
wow,
it's there's a I was out there with Ryan just before pandemic, and we had
dinner. How is Ryan? Is he good?
Yeah, he's good, man. He's really good. He's really good. And we went out with, do you know Terry from Beatport?
No.
And he was talking about all the nights in Berlin, and there's a party called Fist Fridays, which you literally turn up supposedly with your like plastic mat, put it on the floor, get your toys out, and just let people do whatever the fuck you want to them.
My gosh.
Yeah, so it's pretty inclusive, apart from, yeah, Bagai not being allowed in. But I think that whole thing is what was happening.
So you're not going to shave my ass before I went there?
Yeah, mate, you'd have to get that squeaky clean.
Fuck.
In fact, no, probably not. They probably like it. but I think the whole Bergheim thing, I read something up. It was like it was getting so popular that all the tourists were going and people from Berlin weren't actually being able to get into the club because it was always packed full of tourists. And the locals were like, we live in Berlin because we love to party. We love to kind of give back to the community and kind of do all of this, but we can't get into any of the clubs. So you need
That's fair.
So I think that's what it was about, and then it's just a big thing now. Should go.
So without context, you know.
You should go, man. It's a great city. It's a great city. Let's talk.
I'll be down as soon as I can travel again.
Yeah. You can.
I'm having a lot of visa complications.
Oh, really? Why?
One thing I can't speak about, but then there's the visa thing as well.
Oh,
sorry, but until the first thing is sorted out,
you can't.
I'll sort out my visa. Yeah.
So, mate, it's been such a nightmare for everyone.
Yeah. But as it stands, I think I'm going to be stuck here until like March.
Oh, mate, yeah. I was lucky.
Which is awful, man, because I haven't been able to see my family and my friends and my best mates at home since March 2020, and that is grinding my gears, man.
It's 2 years, man. It's long. It's long.
And, you know, like, I love that I've got Chris Lake, who lives 5 minutes up the street, and AC that lives 10 minutes that way. Like, it's nice to have, like,
good mates.
People who are like, close, good mates around.
But it's, you know, like, it's still not...
My sisters and...
It's still not your family, man.
You know...
Yeah, if you got a good relationship with your family, it's like, I was so lucky during lockdown because I have a place next door to my parents, so it's like.
When did you move back from Detroit? Because you were in Detroit for the longest time, weren't you?
Yeah, so I was in Detroit way before I did my open to close tour, and then my last show of the open to close tour was in Phoenix, and Ryan, I was at Detroit Airport. I just drove to the airport because my show in Seattle the night before had been cancelled because of COVID. And I drove to the airport. Ryan called me and was like, mate, we're going to do a second party on the Sunday. Just a heads up, because it's going to be the last party for a while. I was like, cool. Hung up. 5 minutes later, he called me. He's like, Trump's closing the borders. I suggest if you want to be locked down in the UK, you get a flight out after on Sunday morning. So I left my car at the airport and played the show and then got straight out of there. And I was in the UK for the whole of lockdown.
No way.
Yeah.
I was in the UK when Trump announced the lockdown. I was in the Devon Analog studio.
How did you get home? Get back to America?
So I did my last show was with Sonny Federa. Was it Printworks?
Yeah. In London.
It was a venue in London. I don't remember, but I did that show. So then I was supposed to spend the week at Devon Analog, do another run of shows that weekend and fly back the week after. And Megan, she's quite alert to
what's going on.
You know, everything that's going on like in that as a part of the world and stuff. And she's like, I'm just going to keep tabs on it because she was saying you should fly home now because he's going to close the borders.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is paid for. I just want to be here. And I think it was Thursday night or something. And I was up working anyway. And I actually got Atlantic to get a songwriter to come down and stay at the studio so we could, like, you know, jam out on some stuff and try and get some vocal on those down. And he had a car because, you know, Devon Analog is in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere, yeah. It's near me.
Right. So I think it was 1:45 in the morning. that Trump announced it. So obviously it was late in the evening time.
Yeah.
In America, but I mean, they're late in England. But
yeah, yeah. Afternoon.
So most people were still in bed. And yeah, as soon as I saw that travel ban was coming in, so it was going to take effect on the Monday. Yeah. And I was supposed to be flying Tuesday. So I called American Airlines instantly. And I've got good status with them. And normally I get through in like 5 seconds. Yeah. It took me 45 minutes to get through. And I just said to them, I says, I want to change my flight to this flight that I'd found 10:30 the next morning. And they were like, yeah, we can put you on there. So I got my flight changed, luckily. And then I managed to get the songwriter to drop me to the train station. And I had to wake him up to get him to do it because I was trying to get a taxi ordered.
Yeah, you can't run that.
I couldn't get one ordered in time, so I had to go and wake him up. I was like, I need a favour. Can you take me to the train station so I'm going to the airport?
Oh, man,
and even then, I remember I was going around the train stations in London, and I was like one of the only people with a mask on at the time.
Yeah, masks. I remember.
People were looking at me like I was the odd one out wearing the mask. Yeah.
And I remember in the UK when after the first lockdown, people weren't really wearing masks, and then it kind of got in more a little bit in the like June, July time where people started wearing them. And now it's fucking normal here now.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love it. it's more normal here than it is in America.
Yeah.
I think because it's smaller.
Yeah, I think it depends on what part of America, because like in Los Angeles in particular, like, I just went out to grab some food earlier. Everyone will mask up around here.
Yeah.
You know, in just like normal day-to-day things, where I go to other parts of America and...
Yeah, you're...
For example, you know, it's just like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in California, which they take it pretty seriously. I don't know.
You know, people are still dying, you know.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of friends who've passed away from who were like our age, you know.
It's mad. It's got to be fucking hell.
You hear about everything that's going on, but when it's like someone that's close to you that you know and stuff, it hits different.
It hits different, it does. When it's close to home, it's like, whoa, shit. I was talking to my parents the other night and we were talking about somebody and I was like, oh, how did he die? And they were like, yeah, COVID. And then it was like, oh, how did they die? I was like, COVID. And you're like, shit, it has hit a lot more people than you think.
Yeah.
And,
you know, we're still not fully out of this yet. That's what I was conflicted, you know, with like shows happening and coming back and stuff. But like, obviously once they've kind of said, you know,
we're good,
we're not giving anyone any support anymore. You're on your own. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like even still now, like, you know, part of me is still conflicted about going out and doing some of these shows. And I know that it's something that we have to learn to live with now. And I know we're at a different point now than we were, say, back in like April.
Yeah, definitely. I think
the early stages have been rolled out, you know.
I think it is going to be something that we have to live with, and hopefully all the variants get weaker and weaker, and then it's just like the flu every year. And then people just get used to it. And I think that's kind of what would happen generally with something like this. It just kind of weakens out. I don't know. It's shit, man. It's fucked up everyone's life to a certain extent. People are different now. People are different. Like, the world is a different place. People act differently.
It's like a weird dystopian version of what it was before.
Yeah, people act differently in public. People act differently socializing. It's very different. A lot of people with like serious anxiety, like serious.
Like the people who like were living on their own for a lot of the pandemic and like, you know, being in isolation for that long. I've had friends who like it hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
Yes. Who were living on their own and stuff. Some of them just moved away. Like to a different part of the world to try and like, you get their shit and get their mind in order, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's fucking wild. Let's talk about this new single of yours, because when this is out, I think your new single's out.
It will be, won't it?
Yeah.
So I was actually driving with Megan to do a socially distant show at the Midway in February, and we decided we were going to drive instead of fly, so like a 5-hour drive or whatever. Mm. And we were driving up there, and she played the original Mamas and Papas California Dreaming song. And, you know, we was listening. I was like, man, this is so good, isn't it? And then I remembered that I have all of the vocal stems from this project. When I used to like do ghost production and I was working years ago, I used to work with someone called Davey Boy from Echo Records. He managed to get the DAT tapes of all the vocals and all the guitars and stuff that were replayed for this record label called Rumor Records. Yeah. So he got them, and then we did something with it back then. And I kept hold of that a cappella.
No way.
Yeah, because I was like, it's so good.
Yeah, you know? It is.
And when I was transferring a lot of stuff off one of my older hard drives onto one of my new ones, I just put it in a folder and I just remembered that I had the vocal.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something with this when I get back. And I put the vocals in. And mate, it's what, a kick drum, a bongo loop, a clap, a hi-hat, an 808 bass, and a vocal. I tried putting music in with it and stuff, and I was like, it's not going to work. No. I was like, I just need a DJ tool for my sets. It's really going to like work and set it off. And there was an old Ron Carroll record. I can't remember the name of it, but it was real simple. Again, it was just a vocal and beats and bass, and it works still now. You know, you get them songs that just never tire out, and you can always play them in your set, and you always know that it's going to work.
Yeah.
And I just wanted something like that for my DJ sets. So the best part of 3 hours, you know, like I take no fucking credit whatsoever for how that song goes down, because I am not the mamas and papas.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah
I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
I just took a vocal, a fucking Vengeance bongo loop, and a few other things, threw together 3 hours.
Mate, watch. I have not heard about Vengeance loops in fucking forever.
Hey, Vengeance loops.
They were the ones.
Vengeance, like, I still go and use like Vengeance drum samples from time to time.
Yeah, I need to pull out the old samples.
They're good, man.
Yeah.
They are really good, and they do stand the test of time.
Can you remember EJ?
People are very like splice orientated now.
Yeah, I moved a lot to splice.
People are using producer packs and stuff, and like most of these producer packs are just regurgitated
Vengeance
like, samples that they've just kind of put in there themselves, you know. Mm.
Yeah, I use a lot of splice, but for like one hits. Mostly,
yeah,
and then
all like effects noises and stuff.
Yeah. But
I know there are certain people who build their whole like records off like spliced loops with like pianos and
there's
stuff. And
some of the biggest hits right now of like we all know that one of the biggest hits was made last year was all splice.
Which one?
I don't want to say because I don't want to throw him under the bus because I know.
I mean, like for me, I get why you'd say that, but look, I've always been under the impression that, not impression, like, I don't care how you get there. If you're going to make a banging record, whether it's a loop.
I agree.
Or a sample, like, it doesn't fucking matter. As long as people dance and people like it, you know, people can moan all they want about, oh, you didn't play this, or, oh, it's a sample and stuff. It's like, so fucking what, man?
No, I agree with that, totally.
You know, I've spent hours before trying to, like, craft everything from the ground up and stuff. And, you know, something that I thought, this is a good record, doesn't fucking work. Throw something together in no time with no real
thought and effort. They're the best ones. They work every time. It's the best ones.
And then going back to California Dream, this wasn't ever intended for a...
For a release.
For a release, yeah.
Until Lakey got his hands on it.
Once I did it, like, I showed it Lakey. He was like, send me this. I'm going to play this at the Arizona show, the Idiot with Fish. And, like, the reaction was insane.
Yeah, I bet.
It was like, yeah, this is...
Have you played it in California yet?
Yes.
I bet that was mental.
I played it at Crossfest.
Oh, yeah. Week, I love that festival.
So good.
Just love that festival. The guys that ran it are so nice as well. It's just fucking amazing.
They're amazing, yeah. Mr. Shockey and all the LED crew.
So cool.
They know how to run a festival.
They know how to put a lineup together. They know how to promote it. They just do it so well. So well. I played Arc Festival.
I've been enjoying playing for like their shows quite a lot recently.
They're wicked. They're really nice guys as well. Really, the team's really cool. And it doesn't feel like a corporation. Where a lot of festivals feel like a corporation.
Yeah. I guess they kind of are, in a way.
Yeah, of course they are. They're tens of thousands of people.
Nothing against that as well, because, you know, in the same breath, I still love playing for like the Insomniac.
Oh, totally.
Like,
yeah.
DC Vegas, he's just like, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's wild. It's a city. Have you ever played Glastonbury?
No.
No, mate. It's my dream.
I think that I was going to play one time and I got offered £250 plus two on the guest list. But then I had another show offer on that same weekend where it was like 5K.
Yeah.
And a full fucking rider and as many guests as you want. You know what I mean? And I think at the time I was just like,
mate,
let's get this bread. You know what I mean?
Sometimes you just got to fucking take the bread to get that money and just. Glastonbury's never going to go away.
No.
It's always going to be there.
You know.
Same with money. You know, I guess.
I think if the opportunity comes up again in the future, because I've heard it's just super low fees.
Yeah. Have you ever been?
No.
Oh, man. Yeah, you'll be.
It's one of the only festivals I haven't been to.
It's like 15 minutes from my house. So I grew up going there.
Why?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mate, it's. So you know that feeling when you go to EDC and you're like, this is something special.
Yeah.
Like when you go to Glastonbury, this sounds really fucking stupid and hippy dippy, but it will change your life. It will change. No. It will change your views on it all.
Other festivals that have changed my life like that, Shambhala.
I've never been to that. I got booked for it and we couldn't make it routing wise. We just couldn't make it happen.
Yeah.
So annoying, but I've heard.
I remember going there. Yeah, I landed at Thursday evening. And this is the first time I've ever stayed in a tent at a music festival. Mm. So I got there Thursday night and I couldn't see anything that was going on. And there was bits of music on because obviously the Thursday night is like the pre-launch night before everything kicks off on the Friday. So we traveled for like 21 hours and finally got there. I had to lug my case through all of the dust and stuff to the tent, and they put me in this little tent with a little blow up mattress. They're like, here's your bottle, don't lose this. This is what you fill up your water with. And I was like, wow. So I lay on this blow up mattress because I was knackered. I was like, I'm going to try and sleep so I'm fresh for the morning. And my tent was right next to a stage, so there was no escaping the music at all.
Mm.
And then it must have been about 3:30 in the morning, and I woke up and I can hear DEE on a grime record.
No way.
I was like, am I fucking tripping? And I've opened the tent and it's just like DEE playing and it's just this grime beat. And I was like, let me get up. So I got out of my tent and then I went to this like stage area and everyone was just dressed up and it was just so hypnotic and people had blow in the dark hula hoops and they were doing all the things with the hands and stuff. And it's just like, all I saw was a load of hippies dancing to grime music.
Oh, I love that.
Mind. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I've heard it's special. I've heard it.
And then people are just so friendly there and they're coming over and just offering you like drinks and whatever else and stuff, like super accommodating. And I was like, yo, this is fucking tight. Spent the whole weekend there. And I think what it's like going to a festival in England where nobody really puts in the effort. You know, you just put on your clobber, turn up, gun fingers, have a skank and stuff, get drunk, get leery. And then coming from that background to going to a festival like that was really, really eye-opening. This is...
A lot of UK festivals are very different to North American festivals.
Absolutely.
Like, just generally how people are... How I played in Leeds. I did Mintfest the other day.
How was that?
It's fucking wicked, man. It was wicked. I've never played there before. And it was wicked. But of course, I play more in America than I do anywhere else. And I'm used to American festivals. Like, UK festivals are just so different. So different. Like, people are so different. Where I find in the US, people are there to like listen to the music and party and have a bit of an experience. Where I find in the UK, it's like, let's get as fucked as we possibly can and let's listen to the music a little bit, but let's just get absolutely bollocksed and have the best time, which I love. It's like, I love seeing people have fun.
Yeah. I think it's good to be able to have those two different types of festival. You know, if everything was the same, it's going to get old and boring.
Have you played Desert Hearts before? No. Mate, if you ever get the chance, speak to Mikey and get him to book you because it's fucking wicked.
Yeah.
It's
I've heard good things about it.
For me,
I've never done Burning Man either.
Nah, me neither. I think I'm a bit too much of a snob for it. Like, I just don't want to be in a desert sweating my tits off.
I think you need to go and do Shambhala first and stay in a tent for the weekend, and I think you'll be ready for anything.
I'm happy to stay in a tent. I'm cool with that. But it's the heat, the desert heat.
Like, you can tell by our skin tones already that...
Exactly. Like, I can't deal with it.
But then, you know, like so I don't know if it... Does it stay hot at Burning Man on the night times?
I think at night time it gets cold, but in the day it's like...
Yeah, because in Canada, like at Shambhala, it was the same.
Yeah.
It was like freezing in the night time, but as soon as that sun hits your tin...
Sweating.
You're like waking up charbroiled. Yeah, it's... And then you've got like the showers where you have to pull the lever to get the water on you and stuff. Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I love that shit. I love that. No, I do want to do... Justin Martin did... Burning Man for 24 hours and he got the bus in. It was like it was when he first became sober, so he got the bus in, didn't tell anyone he was going, just went by himself.
Are you telling me that Burning Man turned Justin Martin sober?
No, he was sober beforehand.
Okay.
So can you remember Grilson?
Yes.
So when Grilson passed away, Justin became sober, and so that's when Claude became sober as well, I believe. And he went to Burning Man. Justin went to Burning Man for 24 hours, like took his camera, like, and just got a rucksack and was just like, "I'm just going to go for 24 hours in and out." And he said it was the best experience of his life.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I love, like, I'd love to do that and like go there with no expectations and just fucking just be by yourself. And just enjoy it by yourself. That'd be kind of amazing.
Yeah, it would. I mean, I'm quite good at that anyway. Like, you ask my mates, you know, just growing up, you know, if we all go out on a night out, you know, some people stick together and whatnot. I'm in there, I'll have a few drinks with you for a bit, and then I am gone. I'm off. I'm just living in my own head, just going around. Yeah, I'll see them throughout the night and stuff, and I'm really good at... Because, you know, especially, like, you know, when you're travelling, like, doing shows and stuff, you solo quite a lot, unless you've got a tour manager.
Yeah, you have to. You have to be able to.
I know some people need to be babysat. Ugh. You know,
I almost don't want people around me when I'm traveling, and I don't mean that in a horrible way. But I don't know about you, but I just get caught. I'm like, so this is regimented on how I travel and how I like to do things. I'm like, if somebody else comes in, I'm like, fuck, I have to like think about somebody else and I have to pay attention to somebody else. Whereas when I'm traveling,
I think it's different having a tour manager because, you know, their purpose is to like pay attention to you and what you need.
Do you have a tour manager?
No, not a set one, no.
No, yeah.
I'll have a TM come to certain shows if I feel like I need one.
Mm. Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, it can be quite a shit show when you're trying to navigate.
Never had one.
Or getting from one spot to the other and then getting to the
green
room and then getting your rider brought to stage and then off stage. And if you're playing your set and you need a towel or you need a drink or whatever.
Yeah, I've never had one. I've had like Ryan, if you know what I mean, or like somebody around, but I've never had like a direct tour manager that's just purely there.
I know a lot of people swear by them, you know, and especially in this new age now where like... You know, think about all the recap videos that everybody puts together.
Yeah.
They'll have done the show, and then like 3 hours later, there's going to be a recap video up. And I know now a lot of these tour managers, photographers, videographers, all in one, and they all come as like a
It's kind of
package.
Again, it goes back to that fast industry, right? It's like everyone wants everything now. Everyone wants everything an hour ago.
Yeah.
Which I can relate to sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Like, I get hounded for, like, music all the time. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but my thing is making a load of music and never releasing it.
Mm. Yeah. Make a fuck ton of edits, annoy everyone because you play
them. Yeah, man. And here's what I noticed. If you don't release them and you just keep them exclusive, people will moan and whinge at you. It's like, put it out and stuff.
Who said that?
Just people in general, anyone, like fans, people, other artists, my mates who want the tunes, like, can have this. I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
But then, like, you get so much more longevity from that track or that edit or whatever. Whereas if you make it and then you put it out, because people can sit at home and just consume it on Spotify and listen to it over and over again. It just becomes older so much quicker.
Yeah, it doesn't give you any diversity in your sets. Like, I don't know about you, but most of my sets are like 85-90% my own music.
And it depends where I'm playing.
And if I'm...
at least 50% all the time.
Yeah, and if everyone's got your records and playing your records and they're all out, like, it doesn't make your set any good.
No. Especially, like, you know, if you're playing, like, Sunday evening at a festival and then, like, all through the day you've had other DJs just banging out your songs, then when people do come to listen to you, it's like, I've heard this. I'm vibing, but I've heard it, like, another three or four times already.
I bet Fish got pissed off with that. When it first came out.
Yeah, maybe. Because I don't know if I see it as much anymore, but like there are times when like my friends used to put on events way back in Birmingham where like the headline DJ would have a set list of songs that the openers weren't allowed to play.
Really?
I know Eric Marillo, he used to send over to Gatecrasher. It was like 3-4 pages of songs that no one else could DJ.
It's a good shout.
You give your discretion of if he wants to play or not, kind of thing, you know.
Warm-up DJs are interesting because I think, especially in America, people just want to slam it before you get on. How many times have people played?
Well, that's from the record? DJ Carnage handbook, isn't it? I remember the tweet you did. You saw the opener should be shelling it down because you never know who's going to be there. And if the headline act's got a problem with it, that's on them.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it because I always just like reset it. But it's always funny when somebody plays your record right before you get on.
Oh, God.
And you're like, oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for the support, mate.
I haven't had it too many times recently, to be fair.
Recently, but I haven't, no. Had it a couple
of
times.
Over the years before, I've had openers like Shell Down, like the last three songs are my biggest songs that I had. I'm just like, what are you doing? Why are you booking me?
as you walk on the stage as well, so it looks like you're playing it. Because everyone's fucked up in the crowd, so they don't have a clue. They just see you're on the stage and they're like, oh, he's playing.
So that's why you always kind of have to be like a few steps ahead as well.
Yeah, have to be.
Which is kind of like, if we didn't produce, we definitely wouldn't have the...
No.
You know, the sets that we get and stuff.
No, 100%. 100%. And the lucky thing is that we can have an idea and do it quickly. And... send it to a mate. Nowadays, we can send it to mates really quickly, get feedback, and it can be played. Like that Depeche Mode record that I sent you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when you told me to change the clap, sent it to 5 people, and it got played videos everywhere that weekend.
Sick.
And it's like...
It's amazing, isn't it, what we can do?
We're so lucky now. It's like amazing.
Build a record, stick a sausage fattener on the master.
Banging, mate. Sausage fattener.
How people use sausage fattener on the master and they get so mad at me.
Dada Life is we can't thank them enough. That was the best thing they ever did.
Do you use it a lot then as well?
I use it on my, when I'm writing. That's what I put on my master chain when I'm writing. I have like a master chain after, but that's what I put on for my master chain.
8 times out of 10. I end up leaving it on there.
Do you?
Yeah. Because when I take it off, like I don't know what it's doing inside that thing, but like the way it models.
Adding sausage to it, mate.
The low end it does, it just puts the sausage in there, you know. And
girth.
When you take it off, it just falls flat.
Yeah. Are you unable to now?
No Logic still.
Fuck yes.
Are you still on Logic?
Yeah, mate.
We're the last of the dying breed.
We are the last. Born Dirty. I've got a deal with him. I was like, he goes on about me. Literally, it was like 3 months ago, for about a year, he said to me every single day, go to Ableton, go to Ableton, go to Ableton.
It's what Lake says all the fucking time.
I'm like, fuck off. So I was like, okay, we're going to do a deal. You get a 6-pack by Christmas and I will go and I'll switch to Ableton, hands down. I know he's not going to get 6-pack, so he's never going to. So I'm never. But also the deal was that he can't say to me to go to Ableton if he doesn't get the 6-pack. So that's what I do.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to say that learning Ableton is a bad thing because it's not. It's so fucking good. It's so efficient. I have to use it for really anti-op stuff with Blake.
Yeah, it is great.
It is for workflow purposes.
Mm. Yeah,
it's so good. So what I struggle with Ableton is getting a good sound out of it.
Yeah,
and a good overall sound and mix.
Mm. I think it's also it's just what you're used to.
I know Calvin still uses Logic.
Yeah. If it's good enough for Calvin, it's good enough for us, mate.
Exactly.
And exactly. On that note, we've just
producers ever.
We've just done an hour and a half. I think that's the best.
Oh wow!
I think that's the best note to end on.
There we go. There we go.
It's
on Logic. Let's go.
Fucking yeah. Fuck you, Ableton users.
All right, well, thanks for staying up late, mate, because I know we're on a time zone difference.
Oh, mate, thank you for coming on. It was really good. It's only 11:30 here, so it's not too bad.
All good.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm sure everyone that listens to this knows who you are, but how can people follow you? How can people listen to the new record? Blah, blah, blah.
Well, you can follow me on Instagram, ChrisLorenzo66, or Twitter at Lorenzo's Beats. I have a new record dropping on Chris Lake's Black Book label called California Dreaming, where I've sampled an old Mamas and Papas record, and I didn't do a fat lot, but it works.
It's banging, though.
I'm happy to share it with you all. And so this Friday, what's the date we're on now?
Well, this is out on Tuesday next week, so this is out already.
So it's going to be out already.
Yeah. Out already, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect timing, mate. Thank you.
So stream it, download it. The extended will be on Beatport. Obviously, the shorter one on Spotify, because that's what we have to do these days.
Napster, LimeWire.
Yeah, no, Zippy Share, wherever you want.
Yeah, Zippy Share, good times. Mate, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, mate. I know I probably waffled for an hour and a half. But
it's been great. It's been a really good conversation.
It's been like therapy.
Yeah, man, it's been good.
Every weekend.
Are you playing Escape?
No.
I'm in LA for like four or five days around then.
Oh, around do you know what I do want to do? What I said I was going to do with your manager? Ages ago, go climbing, because I know he's into climbing.
Mate, let's Megan's all go.
Megan's got a membership at the rock gym as well, so let's all go climbing.
Let's all go. We'll get Mika out, Born Dirty, because he's been going with Ryan as well.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, let's go.
And you're a bunch of lanky twats, so we can all just laugh at you.
It's supposed to be harder for tall people to climb.
It's so hard for tall people to climb. Yeah, mate, I look forward to it.
Oh, listen, an absolute pleasure, mate.
Mate, thank you so much. Keep safe. See you soon.
Right, love you loads.
Love you, dude.
Good luck. Hopefully I'll see you soon, mate.
Yeah, see you soon, mate. And that's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Share it with your mates. Tell everyone about it. Go listen to Chris's record, California Dreaming, on Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere else. I'm sure you'll find it. Have a great week. Keep safe.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.